and welcome to episode 8 of the Lean Spec series on the Global Product Management Talk channel. I'm Cindy F. Solomon, delighted to be with you today. I'm the founder of the Super Product Academy, and you can find me on Twitter at Cindy F. Solomon, all O's. I'm here again with Malcolm Knapp. Hi,
hello.
Malcolm.
Hi, I'm Malcolm Knapp, and I'm with the Engineer Accelerator, and this is working off of some of the topics we cover in the program. It's a professional training program for embedded systems and electrical engineers.
And I noticed you started a meetup.
Yes, I did. So I started a meetup. It's called Beyond Hello World Electronics, and it's focused on taking people who have gone through all the Hello World examples out there, but they want to go to the sort of next step. You know, this is all about helping people get to more advanced topics. And so you can come, and you know, we'll be having a focus every month, a different sort of dive into detail, and we'll sort of get into that and then switch it up. And so people can sort of see what they want to, you know, choose what they want to get interested in and get working on a project.
Excellent. And speaking of meetups, I want to do a shout out to the Women in Product New York City meetup that is having an event next week, December 20th. Thank you to Pivotal Labs for hosting it. It looks very exciting. They're discussing dealing with legacy systems and legacy cultures when you're a product manager having to bring in new innovation and new products. So definitely check it out. Women in Product at New York City, or go to startupproduct.com. Look under meetups to find that and join. And thanks to the great group of women there who are very excited to put this together. So today we're talking about how to train product managers in this process. And this whole discussion has been our attempt at being transparent in developing this training that I feel is definitely would forward not only new product managers, but anyone who is managing the huge complexities involved with bringing a product through development out to market. So many product managers have come to me, and I mentor people and, you know, help them, but saying, hey, I fell into this mess. I think I'm doing it wrong. I'm failing as a product manager because I showed up on the first day and they just handed me a mess. Or the CEO keeps changing what the focus is. Or, you know, we have this huge feature creep. Or these are all issues that exist in every kind of product, not only software and digital products, but apparently hardware.
Most definitely hardware as well.
And that's one of the things that I found also, that product, so many discussions about product management are only about digital products, they're only about software, because it seemed to me that hardware, because you have the industrial designer, so you have a plan that forces you based on the materials and based on the tangible limitations, you're held to constraints that look like less wieldy than could possibly happen in the software world.
I mean, I would say that there is still all these classic sort of product management problems. There is a bit more, in some ways, the pieces are bigger, and so, but that brings in other issues that you deal with. So, I mean, the first thing I want to sort of begin with is to sort of, we've been talking about this for a while, and I sort of hearing about the plight of product managers, and I sort of wanted to sort of, you know, things are sort of coalesced, and I want to sort of address what I'm hearing and sort of see if it's correct, basically. What the product managers are dealing with. So the first thing is they're coming in to a situation, usually sort of when it's too late, like things have already gone wrong, or the product's been developed partially and has not worked or something like that. So is that sort of, you agree with that? You know?
So the assumption I'm making is that we're talking about technology-driven companies or engineering-driven companies where they've been focused on the product and the operations or the business processes were an afterthought.
Yeah. So, I mean, and it could be that you came in at the right, exactly the right time and it's all great, but you know, many times product managers have to deal with the fact that things are already in sort of flow or that there's been work done on the build itself.
There's some precedent that was there, unless the product manager is the founder of this product.
Yeah.
But even so, the lean spec would assist them in communicating.
So that's part of, you know, one of the things that the lean spec can do is it can operate in both situations. It can help you when if you don't have anything started and you're defining it, you know, completely from fresh, or if things have already started and things are a bit messy, it allows you to see what's been done before and see what remains to be done as well. So that's one of the benefits of it. The next thing is that there's this thing about, you know, product managers seem to not have much authority of their own.
Right.
You see, there's the design, designer or the the hardware engineers, you know, the lead hardware person or technical person. There's the founder of the company or the sort of and so the product manager themselves can't tell people what to do.
Right.
And so this leads to an issue because when those things go wrong, so what do they do in that case? Or what if there's a conflict between two parts of things?
Even if their position is head of product or VP of product, it's still a collaborative role. It may not be discussed that way, but that, you know, based on results, the most effective product people bring the right people to the table, and it's resolved across functions.
Well, and that's, again, what the Lean Spec is about. It's about bringing up these conflicts to the surface, and then in a way that's not about telling people what to do, but to say, so the product manager can use the Lean Spec to say, here's a conflict, and it's between, you know, the design of the product and the engineering, and you guys have to work out the resolution. So you can use the Lean Spec as a facilitation tool as well. And then it means that you create a space for these discussions to happen and resolutions to be come across. Whereas otherwise, you know, getting people to talk about this can be hard, I think.
It can be hard it happens in silos, and that's what the beauty of this is. It's breaking down silos, or it's enabling people to talk across silos.
Yeah. So, the other thing about this is, so there's this thing about when you come in the project, then this thing about facilitation. And the next thing is about the problem we have is, again, we sort of talked about last time, is about that everybody's using different words.
Yes.
Every team has their own descriptions.
Every team.
Yeah.
Every company, every vertical, every type of product, every industry.
Yeah, and so the other thing about the Lean Spec is it gives you an opportunity to synchronize all the different, the language that everybody's using together, and everybody agrees, you know, when they say to display, what does that really mean, you know? Or, you know, when they said the landing page, what does that really mean? Or the onboarding process, what does that really mean?
A key benefit, and actually one of the values of, or the intention of product management, is synchronizing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and this is, I think, so this is something that I think is really, really important, is that the synchronization of the different aspects of the product together, that is what reveals the design conflicts, you know, early enough that they can be dealt with. Whereas when you get into the actual build, they'll come up eventually, but by that time you've already done a whole bunch of work and you have to throw stuff away or, you know, delay projects or jury-rig some solution. And so the Lean Spec is about revealing these design conflicts as early as you can. And so then the other thing about it is that talking about communication is that by filling out the Lean Spec, it means that you have the most amount of communication between teams right at the beginning of the project. Whereas I've seen it a lot where you get a project starts and you have a one paragraph thing description of what the product is, and then The next time all the people are in the same room together is 6 weeks later.
Right.
And this causes serious problems because then everybody's gone off on their own. Here's what I think the project is based on this sort of, you know, short and maybe sort of true, but, you know, incomplete a lot of times and also open to true interpretation a lot of times, document. And so, you know, we were talking about, so this is about giving you a chance to sort of solidify what you are making and also to, you know, to synchronize people together that way.
And I'd also want to add, if we're talking about a bigger organization, mm-hmm. we'd want the technical documentation people, the if there's such a thing as user manual writers, the QA testers, even potentially the customer support or tech support people to be involved and at least aware of this at some point.
Yeah, and so the thing is that the product manager doesn't have to get 20 people in a room and everybody have to agree. Because they're holding the document, they can do things bilaterally between one-on-one or one-on-two, and then when there is sort of, when there's conflicts that come up because between different discussions, they can bring those people together and in a sort of small group setting and have it worked out, you know. And so it means that the product manager then has this document that they control, and that is the representation of the product as understood by the company.
Right.
And so it means that they don't have to keep everything in their head, and it also means that there's everything that's written there has been agreed upon. You know, that's the idea. And it's sort of, you know, if you see something you don't agree with, you know, speak now or forever hold your peace. And this helps control feature creep and all, you know, and also means that you, and helps control the sort of, the what features are implemented when.
And it's lean in versus it, you're referring to all the intentions of the product requirements document. Mm-hmm. The difference is that was written as text and prose, whereas Lean Spec is almost an outline, outline.
It's a bulleted list, it's a block diagram, it's trying to be the minimum, lightest weight documentation that you can get that still captures everything. And so what you do is you try and keep everything, one of the sort of things to learn and to sort of get a sense of is what level in this, you know, we talked about this informational hierarchy. Is every project has the sort of, you know, at the top level is like what the product does, and then as you step down, you like figure out what, you know, then you step down into more and more levels of detail and more lower levels in the hierarchy, and eventually get down to single lines of code and resistors and, you know, what is it, is the frame, you know, 20 pixels wide or 50, you know, but the key thing is that at this high level, you can capture all the parts of the project,
And I could see, you know, if we're saying that the product manager is the owner of this document,
yes.
but not the protector of it necessarily, mm-hmm. because the UX people, the industrial design people, all the other aspects of it, they need to own their piece of it mm-hmm. that informs, that contributes to the rest of it.
Yeah, so the thing is that they're the owner of the document, but the different teams contribute to their piece to it. And the product manager's job then is to make sure that all the different pieces synchronize together.
So how this document is held and what kind of platform or software it's yeah. communicated on becomes critical, because versioning is very important.
Well, so what you can do, I mean, again, what you're trying to do is represent the type of information you need to capture in the right form of documentation. So basically, most of the information you can represent just in a text file. And that means that you can actually keep it in GitHub and do the same and use all the same differencing tools and version control and all sort of stuff like that that you would with code. But it's human readable. It's structured human readable language. And so that means that you can take advantage of all these great tools that are out there. There's also a block diagram, which is a graphical representation of the connections between different parts of the product. But And that is that's less, you know, version control. You can't use the same text-based tools, but
you can use wireframing tools.
Yeah, you can use that sort of thing. And so it is the idea is that then you can start using these version control tools. You can start using the collaboration tools that are out there. I mean, them sort of merges and, you know, and forks and all this sort of stuff like that could actually be done with Lean Spec.
And speaking of training product managers, that's a key. If they don't already know how to utilize GitHub, GitHub, that's something engineers use.
Mm-hmm.
You know, using the tools that are already being used within the organization and by the other departments is very important for product managers to be familiar with and well-versed in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the thing is that it's also using the tools that are good tools.
Yeah.
It's not just, it's that
so
they're powerful, and that's one of the things. When I was thinking about the format and the documentation and thinking about that, you know, realizing or trying to see what the power you have. And again, one of the things that happens is that you end up with Word documents and things of that sort, which are much, much harder to compare versions with, and they are very good for making nice, beautiful like documents you print out and show to people. But for internal product management or, you know, that sort of thing, internal use, they're sort of overkill, or there's too much. You know, you can actually get a lot of information with simpler systems, and therefore they're lighter weight, they're easier to use. You don't spend time, you know, formatting, you know, bulleted lists in Word, which is a nightmare, and all that sort of stuff like that. So sort of to swing back around, so what we have is when you're thinking about what a product manager is dealing with, there's the issue of, you know, coming in, you know, potentially, you know, after the build has started, and the lean, you know, there's the issue of sort of not having sort of cannot, you know, having to facilitate versus command. There's the issue of keeping everybody synchronized so the design conflicts don't come up. And there's the issue of just managing all of this sort of very, quite complex projects with lots and lots of information in them. And the Lean Spec can actually help with all those things. So that's why we think it's sort of, why we think it could be useful. Is it seems to map very directly onto the situation product managers find themselves in.
Right.
Yeah.
So naturally, providing a training to this process, do you think that we, I'm thinking out loud,
yeah.
I think we would need to have a segment of it be learning how to use GitHub, have that be your prerequisite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think that you know, basically there's a couple things to learn. There's the format of the documentation. There is the creating the process of creating the documents, and then there's the sort of the you know, dealing with conflicts or dealing with the sort of that type of sort of setting up those sort of decision points so that conflict can be resolved. Again, just sort of going through different types of skills. And then, yeah, and then there's this sort of very basic, like, here's a tool, here's how to use the tool, you know. And that's GitHub is one, and I actually use, you know, for block diagrams, I use vector-based programs.
And we use Balsamiq,
So I mean, that's just, you know, what I use. I mean, for Balsamiq, there is, you know, it's an interesting for block diagrams. I've used Balsamiq a little bit. Actually,
it might be overkill.
Well, it's the thing is, its focus is wireframing for screens.
Yes.
So showing where is I'm talking about connecting blocks with wires, and so, you know, the classic one is Visio.
Yeah.
And I actually don't like Visio because I find myself finding the tool all the time.
Well, it's an older tool.
Well,
it's been around.
It's been around. It's classic Microsoft stuff. But a lot of the those type of block diagramming tools, I actually find them less useful than you would think. And so
right.
I use a full vector program like illustrator or affinity designer.
So that might be another prerequisite, because Illustrator is a professional tool.
Well, actually, I've been starting to use Affinity Designer, and that's actually really nice, and not, $50 a month. It's like $50 once. So,
yeah, that's also a key thing.
Yeah, so the tools are flexible, but there are, and it's not to say that anybody can use their own. They can use their own one if they find one they like. But the idea is that there are the sort of the way you create documentation. For a lot of it, you can do in just a text file, like I was saying, so that's anybody can have that. But for the graphical stuff, there is some more limitations.
Because I see this training as foundation for new product managers.
Yeah.
For people who perhaps have been engineers or designers or on the business side, and they want to understand what product management is, this is an excellent introduction to technical product management and what they can expect to see, plus an opportunity for them to gain some tools, build a portfolio showing what their capability is.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, I think that to think about the form of a training, I mean, you know, this is sort of what we have is that there's sort of, then there's also another thing we haven't talked about yet is actually domain knowledge.
Right.
Is that, you know, knowing what an amplifier is, not the specific types and all that, but what it sort of does in a block level, you know, level in the informational hierarchy, is important, you know, and knowing that, you know, you use a battery in this situation, and then you need a charger for the battery, and you need a charger for the charger, you know, you need a power source for the charger, and so forth. That's, that level of information, I think, is something that you do need to get to. And so, that's a much bigger issue, and in some ways, what the training would be about is sort of giving you the sort of, you know, showing you where you need to get to.
Right.
About that.
Right, seeing where the gaps are in your knowledge. Mm-hmm. And then for people who have already been doing product management, or the other prerequisite is that you have domain knowledge, but maybe you don't have product management knowledge.
Yeah, so then...
Which you need to get hired. You have to... That's who they're looking for. Mm-hmm. They're looking for people with domain knowledge, and they don't know how to hire what product managers need to know.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, it's a sort of nice catch-22 in some ways. I mean, the key thing about this is that this is managing the meta, so it's not the technical thing itself. It's be above that.
Yes.
Or sort of on around it, maybe is a better way to put it. So, you know, I think that that's a bigger issue. I think that that's one thing that that's one of the sort of harder things, because people come from very, very different backgrounds, and they have to then, the training would have to accommodate for that, basically.
Well, I see the training as we're teaching not only a skill and a process, but also an approach. Mm. How to think about this? Mm-hmm. How critical thinking of this? How to communicate about this? How to language or describe your knowledge in a relevant way to the teams and the domain that you want to work with.
So it's how to speak the language.
Right.
You know, it's basically what you're getting at. I mean, so what I'm sort of, you know, recording here is there's tools, which is, and there's formats of the documentation. There's the process of creating the documentation.
Right.
And then there's the sort of, once you have documentation created, there's the sort of, what do you deal with, what are the issues you deal with? So facilitation of, you know, design conflicts, like dealing with, or sort of design conflict resolution, you know, when you deal with feature creep, how you manage that, you know, and that sort of stuff like that. So, I mean, is there any other stuff that you're thinking about that's sort of coming up to your...
You know, the pillars behind Start a Product Academy are this four main things that everything falls into, required in order to generate excellent product results. And that's, you know, who the people are, what the people factor is, what the knowledge necessary is to not only that the people have to have, but the knowledge around that product and and all of the knowledge, then the processes required that are distinct at the different phases of the product development and product lifecycle, and then what are the best tools, so the most efficient, lightweight, or the best tools at each phase.
Yeah. Okay. So in terms of that, in context of the Lean Spec, about a training, sort of how do you see, we've talked about some of them, but sort of what is that, are you sort of, are we hitting all the points in that?
Oh, definitely. This is what my excitement was with this process to begin with. That in teaching it, it draws upon all of the discussions and the awareness that someone who is a product manager needs to be aware of what the huge scope is of what it means to have the title of product manager, and then how to organize it, but then also how to approach what to do, because there is never a precedent unless it's already a product management team that you're coming into, but you, generally you've been hired for a new endeavor, either to save a dying product or to innovate, or to, you know, product managers are not, they're thought of as an after effect, and and they're thought of only when there's generally 10 to 15 to 25 engineers, or there's everyone else that can be justified on the team, and then nobody ever understands what the value of product management is, other than something's broken and someone needs to fix it.
Yeah. So what we get then, so that there's this thing about the translation of this need into a product, and the way the conceptualization of that, independent of sort of its implementation, sort of, or sort of you know, at the highest level. And so the two things that I've been sort of one of the sort of things that we're thinking about is this sort of system thinking,
yes,
as a way of conceptualizing products,
yes,
and breaking them down,
yep.
And then there's another, you know, then there's the ways of conceptualizing the sort of the behavior, or the sort of the thing that the product does,
the
in terms of its product states and events, like state machines sort of thing. It's sort of another part that's sort of at a high enough level that it can be applied to any product, basically. And then the part of what this is all about is capturing the different aspects of the information, aspects of a product. You know, there's the form of the product itself, which is like, you have to make it, you know, a visual representation, you know, 2D, was it a 2-point perspective is a great skill for this. You know, if you're dealing with a physical form, you need to be able to draw it, you know, somehow.
Right. And even in digital form, the screen is actually the physical aspect of it.
And so there's, you know, floor planning, or like that idea of like wireframing, maybe the better way to put it, is then, you know, if you're talking about this high level, what is this first layer in the informational hierarchy? Those are the skills we're getting at. And the system thinking is really, really good, useful on the, you know, electronics hardware level. 2-point perspective is really, really useful at the like mechanical level. You know, wireframing is really, really useful on the digital side, you know. So we're getting these sort of getting at the sort of those types of skills that are all about this translation, this very first translation of this sort of amorphous need into a specific product. And I think that, and that's, I guess, the you know, what we're really getting down to is, you know, we've talked about all this stuff and there's all this sort of moving parts, but the Lean Spec is about figuring out the specific product you are making. And so, and that's part of the skill, part of what you're learning, is when have you gotten something specific? You know, and how do you get that from someone? You know, one of the things I have to do a lot of times is draw that out, you know, and get more specific language until something has been, you know, is defined enough that it's not, you know, when people can agree on what that means, you know. So I suppose one thing we could talk about, I mean, we sort of, is about sort of examples, because I think that's one of the biggest things that helps people get into this sort of stuff. And, you know, I had this idea of actually going through doing an alarm clock, a radio alarm clock example, and actually breaking it out and saying, well, what is, you know, how many buttons does it have on there, and what do those buttons do, and how do they attach to everything else, and how does that affect, you know, how the product behaves, you know, I mean, so I think that...
So the idea of starting with a product that everyone can relate to, that's a consumer product that everyone has.
And then you can use that as the sort of, to give you context for the rest of the stuff.
How to ask the questions, or how to approach it.
And one of the biggest things that makes it, so the power of the Lean Spec comes in at the end, there's a sort of right at the beginning and right at the end. Because right at the beginning, you sort of see all the connections, you have to fill them out, and you see the size of the product you're dealing with, but the project you have. But at the end, that's when the design conflicts appear. So whatever training we do has to be able to get people to that point. We can't give someone a sort of the intro, you know. They have to be able to get to the end of a Lean Spec, fill it out, and start seeing this synchronization part, and seeing how that stuff start to line up, and if it does or does not. And one of the things I like to think about is, you know, if you're thinking about states of, you know, I call it sort of filling out the table. You think about all the different behaviors or things that can happen to a product, and, you know, what you have to do is fill out every single one of them, all the cases, you know. And by, you know, the Lean Spec that's what you get to at the end. You start seeing these different cases that are sort of, they appear automatically because you just are filling out the documentation and you have to figure out what you're doing in that situation. But it only works when you get to the end. So this is part of things. We have quite a lot of information, I think, to get across to people. You know, when I was doing this training, this, you know, the difference is, you know, when you're talking about block diagrams and talking about the formats, there are subtle differences. So, for example, you know, this has a screen on it. You know,
he's looking at his phone.
Yeah. So the phone. My phone has a screen on it. Every phone has a screen on it. But there is
every smartphone.
Well, lots of
flip phone.
I think we can. I think we
current digital mobile phone. Current mobile phone.
I'm going to make a bold statement. I can say phones have screens now. Every phone has a screen now.
Even landlines.
Even landlines have screens. But you know, there's a thing about having a screen and what the characteristics of that screen are, for example.
Right.
And you know, so is it a feature? Is it, you know, what is the hierarchy of information in the product? Is it that it's a color screen? It's color. Is that a high-level feature or a low-level? Is that just a part of...
Or that it's plastic or glass?
Yeah,
or unbreakable
sort of,
glass?
Yeah. Or what is the organization, the association of this information together? You know, for me, I'd say that there's a screen, and part of its characteristics is that it's in color. You know, but you could also say you have, you know, we need to display color, so we'll have a screen. You know, you could reverse it or keep them separate. And so... This sort of thing, that parsing that out and starting to think about products in that way, not as the sort of black box or the sort of thing that's but actually to start viewing them as systems and then seeing how the information contained in them, the sort of the definition, how it's hierarchy sort of it's related together is very important.
From my perspective, what drives the hierarchy is the customer experience.
Mm-hmm.
So I start with the form factor.
Mm-hmm.
How big, how heavy, how all of the things that would affect the end user.
Mm-hmm. Well, but that's interesting to say. But the thing is that if you're looking at it from a product level, the weight of a product is associated with everything that's in it. Whereas, so it's at the high, so I call it product characteristics, it shows up. And that's where the weight of your target weight will show up in that list. But putting the weight of the product in associated with the screen.
Okay, this is important because product marketing manager and the product manager, if there's two different, would have done market research.
Mm-hmm.
To identify, here's what currently exists in the market. Here's what are the most generate the most revenue from the competitors. Therefore, in order for us to have a market opportunity, here are feature requirements. It has to weigh this. It has to be this size. It has to be this color. Those would be recommendations based on data, but that would be where the starting point.
Yeah, but the question on the product manager and the lean spec side is how are those different requirements related to each other? You know, and so that's the organization, the relative organization between them.
And how they're related to each other, meaning how it affects decisions in terms of sourcing materials the internals.
If a screen size is defined, we want it to be a 5-inch screen,
right,
or something like that.
Why aren't they round screens?
So that's that's a requirement that's associated with just the screen,
right?
You know, and it has an effect on the overall size of the product, but that specific requirement is associated just with the screen, whereas the weight is associated with the whole product.
Right.
And so this is part of what the Lean Spec is all about. It's about organizing all this stuff together so it's structured.
And that's outside the scope of the product manager. The product manager isn't making these decisions.
We're
providing data saying if it had these kinds of things, we'd have the market opportunity, or we'd be able to position this in the market in a positive way.
Well, but so the thing is that we were saying that when you're getting into a build, you're making something specific.
Right.
And so, you know, you have to get down to that level. I would say that this is maybe the difference, is that the product manager has to, may not generate that information, they organize that information.
Right.
And they...
Or facilitates a conversation.
Yeah,
here's the market data I have, and now I'm going to be quiet, but I'm going to be in this meeting how to translate that into a product.
We have three market opportunities. Which one will we actually do? You know, that's one big question about what a product is.
Right.
You have to decide on which one you're going to go for. Or if you're going to go for two, well, you have two. You're making two products then. You know,
and that's often the CEO or someone else within the organization has some vision of what the product needs to be, and then we have to validate whether it's possible to create that within those.
Yeah. Well. So we were talking about where this lies in the whole process of doing development, and the idea is that the product spec or the lean spec would be done when you have market validation, when you have proven and you say, well, we can make something, we have a need, we can make money off it. Then you go to do the lean spec and you define which product you're actually making specifically.
So I'm thinking of the UX people who also have done their research prior to the beginning of the lean spec. And I still see that almost a pre-lean spec can capture that market information in the UX, the end user experience requirements.
Could you give me an example about the UX? What do you mean by that?
Well, they've done research in terms of in order to validate what the best feature functionality. They've studied how people are reacting to other products or maybe existing product lines, and they have recommendations based on how to improve the experience.
And so, again, they would bring those recommendations in.
Yes.
And then the product manager, using the Lean Spec, would have to place those somewhere. This
right.
is one thing I would say, is that every piece of relevant information in a that comes up should get captured somewhere.
Right.
And the Lean Spec, that's what it's all about. It's about placing it so it's structured and organized. And then once you do that, then you can see if it's synchronized together. And so everyone can bring to the table their requirements. And then what you do is you work together and you figure
and
out how they're all related together.
This broad.
And then you can place them in the document where they where they show up. And that's what the product manager can be, the sort of facilitator of that. And can do a lot of the organization of it, you know. And so, you know, so I think that, this is a big thing. And I think if we're thinking about training, you know, this is what that experience is, and giving people that sense. You know, there's a thing about, well, do we have 10 different small examples or one big one? You know, and
From a project-based training, mm-hmm. I would have people come in with a product that mm-hmm. they're going to apply this to.
Yeah.
So maybe they're already working in the field, ideally. Mm-hmm. They can bring a project that they're already working on in order to develop a Lean Spec around it.
Okay.
If they don't, we hand them a product.
Yeah, well, if people will bring their own product, that's great. I mean, I think that's ideal, actually. You do get into defining the product. So there is questions of confidentiality, I guess, in some ways. But if people are willing to do it, I think that would be perfect.
But basically, within the course, we're practicing.
Yeah.
If we're going to mm-hmm. Talk about a specific product, we could go internally and train that team.
Yeah. So I suppose what people could do is then they could bring their product in, and the idea is that they're going through it, and as they do, they learn each piece, they can then apply it to their own product.
Right. Which brings up, is this not appropriate for engineers to learn how to do as well? They're not responsible, perhaps, for communicating the entire product system, but they're... This is a document that is informing what their daily work is about.
I'm an engineer and I've developed the system.
Okay.
So for me, it's been very useful.
Okay, and you've been training engineers.
Yes, and I do train engineers in this. And the reason why is that, yes, they don't need to know the details of where the target price point comes from. But they need to know why it's important. And they need to know that it impacts their engineering work. And so, and the other flip side, the sort of negative way to put it, is that if you're given a target price and there's no way you can meet that price ever, you have to be able to know that answer. And so, just as much as domain knowledge on coming from the sort of marketing side or the business side into the engineering, I think that the engineering has to understand the marketing and business side at, again, this block level, this high level in the hierarchy. So, I think this is definitely appropriate for engineers to go through. If you want to make a product, this is, all these things matter.
Side note regarding pricing, huge issue, because when you're talking about hardware, in software, we have value-based pricing. It's based on what the market will bear. Hardware, this other...
You have a bill of materials that's going to give
you... Yeah, there's hard costs involved.
Yeah, and so... that is something that is, there are different numbers. The numbers come from different places, but they do appear.
Right. And that's something that I deal with a lot in product therapy, and looking at, let's really look at what it's going to cost you mm-hmm. to do this product. Is there a market big enough to make back your money mm-hmm. if you can't charge somebody the amount you cannot charge based on what it costs you to produce?
Yeah. So this is good. I mean, I think we're, it's a very, there's a very different thing about, I feel like as the first half, we talked about sort of the conclusions about, yes, this can really help you know, product managers, it really appropriate to their context, you know, and all sort of, you know, that sort of list we went through about, you know, the facilitation, about, you know, dealing with projects that are sort of started already and trying to contain them, about doing feature creep management, you know, organizing complex information, and, you know, all that stuff is applicable to the, you know, help, the lean spec can help with that. Now, I think that learning, figuring out how to teach that stuff and identifying, so what we need to do, I think, going forward is identifying the skills that we want, the specific things we're trying to teach, the skills we're trying, we talked about some already, we talked about two-point perspective, for example, but, you know, you could also talk about, you know, budgeting, you know, a bill of materials, you know, how do you do that, you know, so there is some, there's these skills, and what we need to get into is to define the skills in the process that need to be taught.
Right.
And design the conceptual things that need to be explained. This thing about how is the informational hierarchy within the lean spec itself. What is a characteristic and what is a feature, or what is a high level and low level sort of things. That's a skill, and we have to figure out what that name, you know, how to teach that. So
right.
I think that that's going forward what we should talk about.
Excellent.
Is the thing we should get generating this list of skills and list of concepts we're trying to teach.
Excellent.
Cool.
So a lot to think about.
Yeah.
We're going to take a short hiatus during the holiday
yep.
season.
And then we'll get back.
And hopefully 2017 will offer new opportunities, new promise.
Yep, yep.
Launch of the product practicum and the lean spec training.
Yep.
And as well as other contributors and participants in this discussion.
Awesome. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Malcolm. Thank you for listening. Also, I want to thank the Port Workspaces at Kaiser Mall. The lean spec is being developed in Oakland, California. So have a great holiday and a great week.